two major events took place this week that might change the way we go about the most basic element of business, paying for what we buy. Apple created a media frenzy about its new Apple Pay wireless transaction service, while PayPal announced that for the first time it would accept Bitcoin as a method of payment. But what do these developments really mean? Are we edging towards that futuristic idea of a cashless society? And will a digital currency like Bitcoin ever become mainstream? We're joined by Fergal Murray, founder of the Bitfin Conference, a conference which brought together digital currency experts and financial regulators. And also, I'm joined by Peter Oakes, a former director of the Central Bank. You're both very welcome to the programme. First of all, to you, Fergal, when I think of money, I am a big fan of a crinkled 5-euro note. I'm even a bigger fan of a crinkled 50. But are these very dramatic changes taking place in the whole concept of money and how we use it?
I think changes are taking place. I think that we've seen the rise of digital currencies or digital payment networks like PayPal over the last 10 years. People like the idea of cash and being able to make fast, easy, anonymous payments for things, but also the existing financial system and the way that banks transfer money between them is based on very, very old technology. It's the financial services industry is probably the only area that hasn't been affected by the internet. Every other industry has radically changed in the way we share, communicate, transfer information around the world. So I think that everybody recognizes that the entire financial system is due for an upgrade, and it's starting to happen now.
Peter, Bitcoin, it's been in the headlines for quite some time. It has grown internationally, but it's also been a source of huge controversy. It has, to a certain extent, been associated with people using it for illegal purposes because it gives them a certain anonymity, a little bit like cash in its own way. I mean, is it something that has suffered some, you know, damage to its reputation and that might set it back as a currency option?
Well, it's probably suffered reputational damage, but no more than what maybe the crinkled 5-euro note or the 50-euro note in your back pocket has. You want to think about what the police forces do when they test huge banknotes for traces of cocaine, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, with Bitcoin, I think, A, it's controversial because it's outside the mainstream. It's controversial because the currency isn't backed by a central counterparty, like, say, a central bank, the ECB. And because of that, we don't know enough about it. There is a lack of consumer trust. And we had quite a big episode in the States where a business called Silk Road went down and it was up to all sorts of nefarious activity. But one of the forms of currency that was utilized to buy goods and services through Silk Road was indeed Bitcoin, but so were other forms of for money. So in that respect, I guess you could say, look, like anything else, it's experienced controversy. But I think you need to look at it in the wider digital currency piece. And this is my particular interest is the innovative technology that goes to support things like Bitcoin. And just very welcomingly, just was recently on the 11th of September, the Bank of England released two very good papers talking about the future of digital currencies. And indeed even came out to say that it is likely one day that money could exist without a central counterparty like a Bank of England. Now, they say right now the risk of that, but that's not going to happen overnight. But I think what's very interesting is they talk about Bitcoin and digital currencies, not just through this financial crime spectrum, the money laundering spectrum that a lot of regulators do. They're looking at it more fundamentally, the most important aspect, which is monetary stability, i.e. things like inflation and financial stability, the use of payment systems. And there are a lot of benefit of these digital currencies. Recently, I made a small purchase here in Ireland. And the cost of the transaction fee was 20 times, sorry, the cost of the transaction fee was 20 times lower than what it would have been had I used a standard bank debit or Visa card. And that's where these digital currencies, which actually just aren't currencies alone.
That's where they have an advantage.
Yeah, they're also a payment system. And I just say, in terms of the Irish government, don't forget we're coming up to E-Day in 6 days where the government's going to stop accepting and issuing checks in relation to businesses. So
yes,
Ireland's part of that drive.
And I want to come to that in a moment. Fergal, just sticking with Bitcoin, an interesting example, a businessman, one of the guys on Dragon's Den, Peter Casey, has a business in Atlanta. He told me a story, he wrote about it in the newspaper, that his company got a technology virus, and the virus had a message with it which basically said, we will unlock this if you pay $300, not a huge amount of money, $300 equivalent in Bitcoin.
Yep.
He got IT specialists, he couldn't unlock it, he paid the money and it went through on Bitcoin. Now, you could say that cash can be used in that way, but not across international boundaries. I mean, these guys are only collecting $300. If they got that off 10,000 businesses around the world, it's a whole other proposition, isn't it?
I think you're right. Having a large-scale pseudonymous network, which is what Bitcoin is, that allows value to be transferred instantly, it creates opportunities for criminals. I think there's a really close analogy here between the arrival of Bitcoin, which is a decentralized currency, and the arrival of the commercial internet in the early 90s. And, you know, for the first many years of its existence, the internet was simply a tool for academics. As large-scale consumer adoption happened of the internet in the early 90s. Everybody was concerned. You had the Hollywood studios up in arms because they thought they couldn't protect their content. You had law enforcement deeply concerned that criminals would have access to secure communications. You had corporate IT types who wouldn't allow their offices to connect to the internet because they were worried about hackers and viruses. And over time,
But all of those things actually happened, didn't they? But in smaller levels.
They absolutely did. But tools and laws and social norms evolved that it's now impossible to imagine a business not connecting to the internet because they're worried about hackers. And I think the Bitcoin has some of the same challenges. It currently is seen as an unregulated fringe payment network. It takes time for that to change. But I think the benefits of having a system that lowers transmission costs, that eliminates fraud, and that allows any amount of value from a fraction of a penny up to millions of dollars to be transferred instantly is compelling.
Peter, what about this Apple product? What exactly is new about that, or what will it do?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm actually not sure what's new about it. It's a new form of interface developed by Apple. It seems to piggyback off the traditional payment systems. Maybe, and Fergal will probably go into this in a bit more detail, that something might happen with Apple in 5 years that will take it off the traditional banking stream, but it doesn't look to be any different than any other system which piggybacks off traditional banks.
Fergal, were we all distracted by you too, and we thought that this announcement came out and is actually not that new, is it?
What will it do for people? So I haven't had a chance to play with the technology, and I haven't seen all of the technical details, but what it looks like is a faster, simpler way to pay for goods using credit cards, either in person or online, and gets rid of some of the security issues that we're all familiar with. Right now, when you pay with a credit card, you hand over all of the details that allows somebody else to fraudulently use that card later. And they've put on top of the existing credit card system a clever security layer and a human interface layer, so that it's a very quick and easy, effortless way to securely transmit just enough information for the transaction to happen. So only you and the merchant see who you are. Apple don't get to see who you are, what the payment is. But fundamentally, it's still using the credit card infrastructure, and all of the fees, the 3% fees that get paid, are still there.
Peter, in relation to all of this technology, to play the Luddite here to a certain extent, I'm fond of cash and I use my debit Visa card in lots of shops now because all of the terminals are there. What's wrong with what we have right now, where there are multiple options for spending your money in a convenient way?
Well, it's up to the consumer. It's their choice. If a consumer wants to continue to use credit and debit cards, then so be it. But the idea behind the thinking at the moment is that there's a lot of costs involved, a lot of intermediators involved in it, which puts up the price of the ultimate good and service to the consumer. So the idea of moving to more electronic cash is to lower the transaction costs. But then you also need to bring people along on a small political journey to get them to accept new forms of electronic payment. So whether we're moving from cash and checks to electronic transfers by my bank account to your bank account is just another step in the removal of cash, I guess, and negotiable instruments like checks from society. Now, they won't ever be fully removed, but their use will drop somewhat. And that's what keeps the central banks happy. And we have a national payment strategy plan in that area here.
Fergal, is there anything that you think Ireland should be doing in relation to the development of new digital currencies? We're part of the Eurozone. Should we sit back and say, well, look, whatever the EU and the Eurozone decides, that will affect us? Or is there something we could do to get the jump and get ahead of others?
I think that's a difficult question. I think that certainly in terms of regulation, we are led to a certain extent by the ECB and the European regulations that we have limited scope to manoeuvre there. We do have agencies, the IDA and Enterprise Ireland, whose charter is to expand our capacity for innovation and all of that stuff. They don't seem to be... the legal changes that would be necessary aren't within the remit of you know, Enterprise Ireland or the IDA, and the central bank is concerned with consumer protection and financial stability and all of that. So it's it would be nice to see more joined up thinking, but those are different departments with different functions, different institutions with different functions, and it's it would be nice to see us being a little more proactive, but it's difficult to see it happening now.
Sounds like it would be nice, but it may not happen anytime too soon. Fergal Murray and Peter Oakes, thanks very much for joining me on the programme.